time to get our view from the north. He's been in Vegas, mini Vegas, known as Spokane, the Magic Kingdom this past weekend. Find his work for Comcast Sportsnet Online. Visit CSNNW.com. Join the crew who follow on Twitter. Use the handle at Aaron J. Fentress. Lots to talk about. Let's bring in Aaron Fentress, Mr. Fentress. How you doing?
I've been better. I'm a little under the weather.
Oh, that's not good. What'd you do in Anaheim? Go ahead, fess up.
I was fine until I went down to spring football practice Tuesday. Then that night, I was feeling under the weather.
Oh, man. Yeah, you sound like crap, dude.
I know. I shook hands with Hieronymus Grassu and Marcus Mariota, so I'm blaming one of those two.
Okay, yeah. Once you get to the pros, not as immune as you once were, I guess. I always forget to remind people, beyond what you do for Comcast and Twitter, you set up a special Facebook page that has to do with your gig. For folks who haven't heard about that yet, where could they find it, and what kind of stuff could they find there?
Oh, yeah, it's Aaron Fentress CSN, I think, on Facebook, and it's just I post everything there that we post on CSN. We're doing a... NBC Universal is doing a big Facebook push across all the different entities, so we're trying to make our presence better on Facebook. I guess that the Facebook algorithms are better than Twitter or something like that. So
no, it is.
I just do what I'm told.
Oh, okay.
Once I start getting into all that algorithm stuff, I'm like, what?
I like it. The minute you mentioned algorithms, I was like, maybe he's on some kind of medication we're not aware of. Oh, sorry. We were having a conversation this week about some of the best performances you've seen in person. And obviously you've NBA, Super Bowls, all the great college stuff. Seeing a guy like Buddy Hield score 37 points to get his team to a Final Four, pretty big stage. How high up the list of that of stuff that you were there to see in person?
Yeah, that's a good question. I hadn't thought of it like that. No, I mean, it's definitely up there. He was unconscious. He didn't care. I think I tweeted one time during the game that he was taking Damian Lillard fadeaway threes. You know, Lillard sometimes comes down close to Jackson a fadeaway three. He was doing that against Oregon. He just didn't seem to care where he was on the court. And Oregon was trying to defend the three. I mean, you know, they were trying to sort of take it away, but he just stepped back. So like Steph Curry did. Okay, you want to take away the traditional three? I'll take my own three. My own three-point line. And when a guy is shooting like that from that distance, has no range, it makes it very, very difficult to beat him.
Now, after the loss, I saw you tweeted out about Dylan Brooks and, you know, the should I stay or should I go card. I think there's NBA potential there, but I think we saw in this tournament, it's still a little bit raw. So your take on whether he should come back for his junior season, and if, in fact, you believe eventually he ends up as an NBA draft pick.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt he should come back. When you're not listed on anyone's mock draft boards, that's not a good sign. I mean, that's basically telling you they don't think you're ready. And since you have two more years left, you might as well come back and fix some of the things you're not very good at. And one of them is shooting the three. He shoots 33%. You know, he needs to get that back up to you know, 40 or 40-plus, because he's shooting a college three, not an NBA three. And if you're going to play, you know, small forward or two guard in the NBA, and you can't shoot the three, I mean, what good are you, especially in this day and age? And he's decently athletic, but he's not, you know, overwhelmingly athletic. So what I like about him is he's smart. He's smart, and he shares the ball, and he can rebound, and he's got some toughness to him. But he needs to work on his game, period. And I think if he comes back, he can play his way into being a sure draft pick, whereas right now I think he'd be on the bubble of being drafted. And I don't know why anyone would come out early, you know, on the bubble of being drafted. That doesn't make any sense. Same thing with Dorsey. Dorsey right now would get drafted, I think, second round probably. But, you know, again, you have 3 years left. You know, you have a lot of work to do. You might as well come back and keep working and raise your profile so you can be a first-round pick. And who knows, after 3 years, he could be a lottery pick. Look at Hill. We just talked about him. He's a senior. You know, he didn't go to draft last year, and he stayed this year, and now he's going to be a lottery pick. So there's something to be said for maturing and growing and developing your game. And I've always hated the whole you've got to go early thing. I mean, I get it from a money standpoint, and I think, you know, guys need to do what they need to do, but development's important, and it's, you know, the guy's clearly not ready. I don't see the point in going to the NBA other than the money. And the money's hard to turn down. But if you're not going to get drafted, you're not going to get the money anyway. So why go?
Let me ask, are we allowed to be selfish and say, plus if they come back, they're going to be really good again and we get to follow a really good team?
Yeah, you can be selfish. And that's good for him. I mean, if he and Dorsey both get into the tournament and do well again, then that's going to raise their profile. And so, yeah, I mean, there's something to be said for that, both on a selfish front for Oregon fans and from their front. It definitely improves their overall chances.
We're talking with Aaron Fentress of Comcast Sportsnet, a little under the weather. So this Oregon program now, to the dance four straight times, they always advanced. They accomplished a lot. Are we comfortable saying it's now a little bit different, if not substantially different for the immediate future for the first time? If you're an Oregon recruit or considering Oregon, you could kind of figure they're going to be in the mix for the conference and the big dance, maybe for the first time ever?
Yeah, I mean, we're finally starting to see Altman secure high school recruits and keep them around. And one of the things guys were talking about after the loss to Oklahoma was how together Oklahoma was. And they had so many guys who played together for so long. I think the total number of games was something like 700 or something like that, something ridiculous. And so, you know, I've been saying for years, other people have been saying for years, that when you just go out and grab a bunch of transfers to come in and fix things, you might be good for 1 year, but are you building anything? And how far can you really go? Because you don't have that cohesiveness, that chemistry. Like that 1 year, a few years ago, they brought in Joe Young, Kaliste, and Mosier, and they made the tournament, and they won a tournament game. But, man, if they could have kept that group together for longer, imagine what they could have done. Well, now you're looking at Dylan Brooks, you're looking at Dorsey, who are going to be around for a few years, and then, you know, Boucher is going to be around for a couple of years. He was a transfer, yes, but at least you're going to get a couple of years out of him. So if you're a recruit and you start seeing more stability in that area, then, yeah, it makes it more attractive. Because when you look at, they have 3 4-star kids coming in. They might get this J.C. kid, Big B. Williams, who's the number one rated J.C. guy in the nation of power forward / center. They're going to be loaded. I mean, if all those guys come through, they're going to be stacked. And so if you're a high school kid and you sort of see that Oregon might be turning the corner in terms of being consistently good with a strong base of talent coming through the system, yeah, it makes it definitely makes it more attractive.
All right, let's get to football. I saw you had your top 10 storylines, new defensive coordinator. I think Brady Hoke is kind of an interesting case. Is it accurate to say with a new coordinator on the defensive side of the ball, assuming, again, they're going to have a lot of firepower, that he doesn't have to put together, you know, a gangrene lockdown defense, just, you know, where we've seen the success, make stops, be better, and work in sync with the offense?
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see what happens. I'm really intrigued to see where the defense goes next fall, because the number one problem with them last year was that they were just giving up these huge chunks of yards in the passing game. I mean, just guys wide open and guys breaking tackles and running after catch and blah, blah, blah. And they tightened it up a little bit, you know, the second half of the season. They looked good against Cal. They looked good against USC, against two future NFL quarterbacks. And then there's the whole second half in the Alamo Bowl where it's a backup quarterback. They just got lit up for like 300-plus in the second half. So, you know, they could have won that game had the offense gotten 2 more first downs. But the point was that defense was getting tore up. So, and then you're replacing 6 of your top 7 front 7 guys, and you're switching defenses as well. So there's a lot of things going on. I do think the secondary is going to be better, and there's at least 2 or 3 future NFL guys back there. So that alone will help things, because they shouldn't be giving up the big plays like they were. And the fewer big plays you get, the harder it is for a team to drive, obviously, because they have to run more plays, which leads to more mistakes. But, you know, I don't think it's realistic to think we're going to see some kind of dramatic turnaround where they go from, you know, 1/15th in the nation to 15th. You know, I think if they can just get in the top 60, you know, and then more importantly, it comes down to points too. The yards thing to me has always been overrated, because they give up a lot of yards because they give up a lot of plays because of the offense. But you want to keep people out of the end zone like they did in 2014, excuse me, when they went to the national championship game. They only gave up, I think, 23 points per game. If you're giving up 23 and scoring 47, your money, you know, and so if they can get back to that point, then I think we'll be fine. But yards-wise, I think that defense ranked 80th or something like that.
Yeah.
So, and the points were 23. I think that was top 25 or whatever. So if they can get back to there, they'll be fine. But it's going to be a challenge because you've got to replace so many moving parts on the front seven.
We're talking with Aaron Fentress, Comcast Sportsnet. We had a long talk on air with Dakota Prukop. I just think the guy comes off as having his head on straight. I think he'll be a really good player. But like you wrote about, nothing is an absolute guarantee. What do you see as some of maybe the obstacles he faces, among them maybe considering the recent history of the position at Oregon?
Oh, I tend to believe he's going to be good. I mean, I don't see why anyone would say he wouldn't be good, because he already is good. I don't think it's going to be a huge jump for him in terms of jumping to the next level. But we don't know if he's going to be Vern Adams good. Vern Adams, to me, is just a baller.
Yeah.
It just didn't matter what situation he was in. He made plays. And you see some of that in the coda on his film, the ability to escape, the ability to throw off balance, different angles, throw on the run. So, you know, I foresee him being good statistically. The question is he going to be as much of a gamer in the clutch as Vernon was? And that's, you know, because they had like several games even with Vernon where they could have lost easily.
Oh, yeah.
And he made big plays in timely moments to win games. And so there's that, you know, some people call it the clutch gene kind of thing. I mean, we just don't know where Dakota is on that. And someone pointed out the other day, I said, well, they had a bad season last year at Montana State. And I'm like, yeah, but they averaged like 40-plus points a game. I think in the games they lost, I think they scored 42 points per game.
Yeah.
So, you know, he was getting it done. They just had mediocre defenses. But you can say, well, he didn't get it done enough. You know, they have 49, he needed to score 50. And that's, you know, that's kind of tough to say. But at this level, there might be some days, especially with the defense still trying to fix itself, where he may have to put up 44 to win 44-40. And, you know, we just have to wait and see if he's capable of being that guy in the fourth quarter. You know, that's what we don't know. I think through the functionality of the offense, through, you know, play faking and rolling out, and there's, you know, Devin Allen on crossing route wide open, I think he's going to hit him, you know. But in pocket, third and 15, if they have to make a big play, is he going to make the play? We just don't know.
Final thought. Pretty sure who the starting running back is going to be. And I'm with you. We're not even going to have the conversation a year from now. He's gone. But it might seem like a simple question. Somebody's got to be listed second on the depth chart. But with all they have in the mix, and I guess there's no way to know right now, do you see a clear favorite? Or is it a matter of they're all going to get a lot of chances and we'll probably learn who the true two is in season?
Yeah, you know, last year there was a lot of back and forth between those guys. You know, Tony Brooks-James wasn't hitting the hole hard enough, and between the tackles he had to learn how to do that, whereas Griffin was, and he was showing his speed, and Kenai Benoit had been there 3 years, and he had finally mastered the offense and knew what he was doing. His talent, you know, started to shine through. But when you look at those three, they're all, you know, they're pretty different kind of guys. You know, Tony Brooks-James and Griffin are similar, but Tony has a little bit more bulk to him. But, you know, that speed factor that Taj brings is just nasty. So we'll find out as spring goes along and we start getting more interviews with Gary Campbell, the running backs coach. But, you know, they're all talented enough to where I can't see at this point where one's going to be the straight-out number two like Kenyon Barner was.
Right.
Or like, you know, D'Anthony was 1 year or Tyner. And now we're just going to see all three of them getting playing time, you know, as long as they're productive in different situations where, you know, one guy, you know, provides more of what they need against a certain defense. And I think we saw some of that last year with Benoit and Griffin, who were sort of juggling who was the number two. It's sort of depending week to week and what type of situation they're in and what types of plays they want to run. So I think we'll see more of that this year. If I had to pick the number two, see, I would want to pick Taj, but he's so small that do you want him to be the true number two and get that many carries, or do you just want to pick your spots with him? So I'm going to stick with Benoit as the number two, but it's not going to matter in the end.
All right. Interesting. I like it.
Straddling the fence.
There you go.
Political seasons. I'm learning how to straddle the fence very well.
All right.
I'm watching all these debates.
Pondering a run in 2020, you could catch him on CSNNW.com, on Twitter at Aaron J. Fentress. Play it hurt. Yo, my friend, feel better. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, thanks, bud.
All right, take it easy.